Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm the girl.
And this is Nerd Nuptial episode 133. Today we're going to be talking about a lot of things, but our primary topic is Once Upon a Time, in Hollywood. And we got to see it over the weekend. It's opening weekend. As of the time of this recording, it's still opening weekend. And we got to see it on Friday. And we're Tarantino fans for the most part.
Early
Tarantino. Like, we're not obsessive fans. We're like, oh my God, everything that he touches is gold. Because there's a lot of things that we don't like.
Right.
Of his. But it was, but the stuff
more
that we...
More recent.
Yes. But the stuff we do like is very, very good. And so that's going to be our main topic today. But we have a lot of other things to discuss. For those of you, if this is your first time listening, we are a married couple looking at nerdy life. Looking through married life through a nerdy lens. I guess it could go either way. Nerdy life through a married lens, whatever you want to say.
It's been a long time since you've given that introduction, so.
It is true. It's been a while since I've given that introduction because we wanted to address that because usually for how many years we've been doing this, we either give you an episode every week or no later than, I mean, like three times a month. Like, that was what we tried to do for a very long time. And even when we had Ripley, even when we had a little girl who's 2.5 now, or almost 2.5, we would give you once a week or at least three times a month. Like, that was our goal. But lately, I think the biggest thing, and we'll just be honest with you guys, is that she is just not sleeping the same way.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to have a kid that went to bed at 6, and now we have a kid that goes to bed at 9. And parents out there understand that kids, when they grow older, they basically dictate bedtime. And unfortunately, even if we put her to bed at like 7, she's still up at 9. And that doesn't really lend itself to us recording because we're still trying to coax her to go to bed, unfortunately.
And Ripley is the type of kid where you can't just like put her in a corner and let her do her own thing. Like, we are with her 100% of the day that she's either awake and crazy or asleep.
Yeah.
And so when 9 o'clock rolls around, we got stuff to do.
Yeah. We either have to like take care of functioning as a like people, or we're just dead tired. That's like, yeah, this is not happening.
And so we really do apologize to you guys because we really like podcasting. We really like we really like talking with you guys. We like, a lot of you have messaged me on Twitter or on Facebook or via email saying like, hey, where are you guys?
Yeah,
or
we feel bad.
Like, you guys have checked in, like, is everything okay? And like, we know, and a lot of, even without us even addressing it on the air, people have said like, hey, we know your lives are crazy and we know that you'll give us content when you can. And so we really do appreciate your understanding. And we know that not everybody can wait. Like, you're supposed to give new content every week at the same time, same bat channel, same bat time. And we just are not in a place to do that right now. And we know that certain things will suffer, but that's just how it is.
Yeah, we're kind of getting used to our new normal. And I'm sure we've maybe said this before, you know, when Ripley has gone through other like transitions, and usually has to do with sleep. And as parents, you're always sleep deprived. But we do love podcasting. We appreciate you guys for being loyal and listening to us right now.
Yes, because if you are listening to this episode, you are most likely a loyal listener, someone who's been with us since the beginning. But if you haven't been with us since the beginning and this is your first episode, one of our favorite things to do is movie reviews, new movie reviews. And our last episode, which was 20 days ago, was the new release of Spider-Man Far From Home. And thankfully, this movie is not a franchise film. It's not a superhero film.
Yeah.
It's an original film. And there's nobody in capes and flying around or anything like that, even though we love that stuff.
We do.
It's nice to get away from that.
It's true.
Every now and again. But before we get into that, we have been able to catch up on some TV.
Yeah.
And one thing, I mean, we were totally behind the times on this one. Like everybody and their mom had seen this before us. And it actually took Lee Hutchison from
it usually does.
If you from Filibuster and A24 on the network. You know, go to the nerdparty.com, check out his shows. And he hosts them with Dallas King, two great guys who just have amazing content. They give you, they have great interviews, they have great insight, and from Filibuster and A24 Project, it's just great stuff.
Everybody needs to check it out. Yeah, they put a lot of work into their shows. It's fantastic.
They really do. Like they travel to location, they go to film festivals.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely amazing. And while I'm bragging on them, I want to brag on everybody else. I mean, there is something for everyone at thenerdparty.com. There's Star Wars content, there's Star Trek content, there's Babylon 5 content, there's Doctor Who content, there's other movie podcasts.
Yeah, we're really proud of that.
There's Missing Frames just came out with a fantastic episode about Alien. And
awesome.
It's just everybody.
I'll check that one out.
We're giving you new content every single day of the week. Mm-hmm. And you guys really need to go to thenerdparty.com. Okay, so the show that I was talking about was Fleabag.
Yeah, which is a British show.
Yes, it's a British
Amazon
original.
Prime is how we are able to access it. So if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch it right now if you want to.
And a lot of people do.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two seasons available to you right now.
And there's six episodes each season. Each episode is only like 20, 25 minutes or something like that.
And we were like, okay, well, let's try the show because Lee, it's funny because like, you'll say like, oh, so-and-so recommended this or something like that. And I'll like just ignore you. And then if Lee says it, I'll be like, okay, let's try it.
even though I love Lee to death and we bring this up all the time. And he knows I love him. But even though we take his recommendations very seriously, even though we've been burned the hardest by him. Because
it's either like a love or hate with his recommendations.
There's no middle ground. It's just
really
like,
funny.
Oh my gosh, this is like the coolest new thing. Thank you, Lee. Or the other times, it's just like, do you hate me? Do you not like me as a friend? Is that why you subjected me to this content?
You more so than me.
Me more so, yes. Yes, it's true.
Yeah, but something that loyal listeners will know is what we love breaking the fourth wall. When a character breaks the fourth wall and looks at the camera and talks directly to us, we feel special.
We're suckers
for that. And so Lee Hutchison is like, hey, I know you love that. So he said to Tristan, like, check this show out. It's called Fleabag.
I think he called it a banger.
A banger.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Cracker.
So we watched the first season and I was engaged. Like, even the first episode, I was like, okay, I can see where they're going.
I wasn't.
And you weren't.
No.
And I was like, okay, because I think I just really love it when they break the fourth wall that much that I'm like, all right, let's keep giving this a shot. And by the end, we were like, all right, yeah, let's go on to the second season. The second season, we were in love.
Devoured it.
Yes. And we were like, this is amazing show. This is so fantastic. I think that the first season, they're definitely like trying to find themselves a little bit. And some of the content for our taste is a little bit like raunchier than we usually go.
Yes.
Raunchy in a way like, you know, there's a little bit more, there's more sex than we usually like in a show.
And it wasn't even so much the sexual situations itself, but it was very vulgar in terms of conversation,
things
that she talked about. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying like you're not watching like something on Cinemax.
It's probably
or something
tame
like
for a lot of people, but
sure.
For our taste,
our personal taste,
right.
No judgment on people who don't bat an eye at that.
Right.
But for those of you who don't know, it's written and produced and starring Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is really hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like she... like Fleabag started as a one woman show, and I think it was a one woman show. It was either a one woman show or a stage play. I can't remember, but it was her. And so she got the show made and she got a lot of attention. And she was the robot, the android in Solo.
Oh, okay.
The snarky mouthed one.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the droid.
Oh my gosh, we're terrible. Nerds.
I know. Darren Moser.
Dressed up.
He has a really, really awesome, like everyone needs to check him out. He is a co-host on SETI Alpha 3 on at thenerdparty.com, and he has a legit
suit.
Suit that is, I can't think of the character's name. Oh, he's gonna hate this. But yes, like Star Wars fans know what I'm talking about. She was the voice for that droid, and now she's either rewriting or writing or punching up the Bond film, the latest Bond film.
All by herself?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
But like that's the thing. Like I don't know if she's like I don't know if she's just punching it up the pre-existing script or if she is or if she is writing it from scratch. Like I'm not quite sure, but she is heavily involved wow. with the script.
Well, I think the in Fleabag what makes the show is her 100%. Like I like yeah. the ensemble just fine. Like it's entertaining, but like it's her. Like it's you're her show. Watching it for her.
Mm-hmm. If you don't like her, then you're not going to like the show.
Exactly.
And that was one thing that I kind of struggled with at the beginning because
okay.
at the top of the show, it's not like we were watching Breaking Bad, and I hate to call her this, but she was kind of the anti-hero.
Yeah, like she's not like they don't necessarily put her in the best light. Like she's
a thief.
She's not the best person.
She mistreats her boyfriend.
Right.
She's
We're not spoiling anything.
We're not spoiling anything. I would say she's. Would you say she's an alcoholic or is that somebody else? I don't know. Like, but the, like she did a lot of bad things. Like things right. that were. You're just kind of like, oh, I don't know if I like you. You're not really a good person. Like, do I want to spend time with this person?
But that, you're an interesting person.
Exactly. That's the thing. She is and was an interesting person, and mm-hmm. so that's what carried you along. And it's funny because like. I was talking with Lee about it and he just kept just going on and on about how great the pilot was. And after we watched the pilot, I was just like, I don't know about that one. I didn't really like the pilot. And I actually talked with some more friends of mine, American friends of mine, and they all felt the same exact way that you and I did, where they're just like, it doesn't really get good until the end of the first season.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe it's an American thing? I'm not quite sure.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. Because the second season, who's the actor they bring on? In the second season, it's not spoiling anything.
Love that guy. I love that. He played Moriarty in Sherlock.
Yeah, he's fantastic actor, but he is just...
He plays a priest.
He's a fantastic addition to the show in the second season. And I think, like, if you're going to add people into the cast, like, that's the type of person you need to add in, and it works so well.
Andrew Scott.
Okay, Andrew Scott, yeah.
He was in an episode of Black Mirror.
Yes,
he lately,
was.
Mm-hmm. He was in Spectre for a little bit.
Yeah,
and
we really like him.
Yeah, and he was the main thing that I know him from is Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
He plays a really fascinating Moriarty.
Oh yeah, yeah, so good. So if you're interested in doing a show that's quick,
very little time commitment,
and you know, just you like the fourth wall breaking, you have to like that because.
Mm-hmm. And we're big House of Cards
fans.
We
are huge fans.
And we actually hated it when Frakes started talking to the camera less and less.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Fleabag, which there is no character name for her.
It's just Fleabag.
She is not addressed in the show by her name.
She's Fleabag.
She's Fleabag.
Yeah. So if you're interested in it, give it a shot. Absolutely.
It is worth your time.
It is worth your time.
And if you feel like it's, if you're intrigued, but you're not really loving it, stick it through the first season.
Yes. And... If you're like us, then you'll like the second.
Right. And it's getting all the Emmys.
Yeah.
The second season is getting all the
Emmys.
Yeah,
and the writing is so fantastic. It deserves, it really does.
It absolutely does.
Nominations. We also were able to watch Stranger Things.
And this was at the...
season three.
This was season three. So this was a while ago. This was Independence Day
mm-hmm.
that it came out. And we got to watch it that weekend, and we really wanted to podcast about it, but we just
didn't
couldn't.
Happen.
And then actually, we a longtime listener of the show actually messaged me and said, are you going to talk about Stranger Things? And the more we thought about it, like the more distance that we had between us watching it and season three was, it was kind of a like... do we need to podcast about it?
Right. Yeah.
Like spoiling our feelings. It was kind of unremarkable in my opinion.
Yeah. I think it's kind of funny because we got done with season three and we were like, hey, remember that magic that was season one mm-hmm. of Stranger Things? And I think part of it is that they had something really unique and different in Stranger Things season one. And I mean, that's true for every show, right? It was something right. new. It was something fun and nostalgic. And then now, like, even season two and three, it just feels like we're trying to keep with these characters, even though I felt like those characters' story kind of ended. And yeah. so now it just kind of feels like the creators are just trying to come up with more stories from the upside down to throw at them so that they have a show longer. Does it feel that way to you?
It definitely feels like the first season is by far, in my opinion, I think your opinion too,
oh,
the
yeah.
best season.
Definitely.
By a lot, by yes. a wide margin. Because yes. season two, there was a lot that we didn't like.
A lot.
Basically, the first half of the season yeah. felt like a complete waste.
But once they were, towards the later half of season two, there were some, like, amazing episodes.
Yes. Yes, there was.
Fantastic.
There was. They, mm-hmm. But they didn't use their time wisely.
No.
In season three, I didn't feel like there was any sluggish episodes, but it was just
unremarkable
overall. And it got a little predictable. It got like, oh, like, I feel like 11 has gotten Superman syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Where whenever there's any kind of danger and 11 is nearby, it's like, oh, God, this is the end. Ha ha. And 11 pops out and right. uses her powers.
And I think that you could argue that with time, she's honing her powers. You could argue that, you know, but at the same time, it feels like she's just kind of like the magic button that they use to get yes. out of every situation. Yes. So no matter what it is, and it doesn't feel special anymore.
But to answer your question that I totally didn't about the feeling of season one and are they just extending things? I feel like they got lightning in a bottle mm-hmm. for season one and they're like, we need to continue this.
But I get it.
And I think a lot of people would disagree with what I'm about to say. And I understand that. You and I thought this would have made a great anthology series.
Oh, yeah. Like, call it Stranger Things. I thought that this very first season, I was like, call it Stranger Things and then have a different, like, monster every season.
Or just keep it with the Upside Down, but change out the cast, maybe change right. out the time period.
Right. But here's the thing is that cast has become so famous and, like...
And that's why I think a lot of people right. disagree with me.
Right.
Absolutely. Is that, like, oh, well, the show is that cast. I don't know.
Or make it something like American Horror Story and change it up a little bit. Because right now, I just feel like maybe it's because they're getting older too, right? They're like not the cute kids anymore. But it just doesn't feel as special. It feels a little bit more like, all right, let's see what happens this week.
Yeah, it's just I feel like it would have made a great limited event series. I think mm-hmm. it would have been a great mini series. Like mm-hmm. this is a one-off. Like if they weren't going to do the anthology route, like this is a story.
Right.
And I think we even said after our review of season one, like as soon as Will coughed up the slug at the end, I'm like, oh, we're going to get a season two.
Yep.
Like it's going to be. We're going to keep seeing these
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know people will probably think I'm crazy, but I'm okay with ditching this cast.
At this point, yeah.
And, yeah. You know, like, you don't know what season four is going to look like because of how it ended. We're not going to spoil anything
nope.
for anybody.
No.
But it does end in a unique way where you're just like, oh, where are we going to go?
Yeah.
Where are we going to go from here?
If you wanted to, you could close a chapter. But that was the same situation with season one or two, right?
Yeah.
Like, technically, you could even have a cliffhanger or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
We'll see. And so that's the thing is that like we don't really want to get into specifics because we don't want to spoil anything. And also at the same time, we weren't jazzed about it. And so we don't want to fill a whole episode of it.
Yeah. But we were jazzed to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
It kind of happened sporadically like that. We were like, oh, we can go.
We went the next day.
Yeah. So, which doesn't always happen. We usually have to plan pretty far in advance having Ripley when we go to the theater. But we went to like, what was it? Like a 10 a.m.?
We had to go to a 10 a.m. one because our your parents, my in-laws, are amazing people and they live nearby. And
we have so much support.
We have such a great support system here. And we were with them. We were having dinner and I get a message from Schindler. Mike Schindler, who hosts Retrospective at thenerdparty.com, he text the group in our private Slack channel that we have for the network. And he said, he's like, Once Upon a Time is amazing. Go see it. And I texted him because you and I, when we first saw the trailer, we're like, this is exciting. Like, this has so many great people we like.
Oh, in yeah.
It, or with a director that we like. And it's just like this, just the feeling of it.
It feels right.
The nostalgia, just everything about it just feels perfect. But it had Sharon Tate in it.
Yeah. And we all know that. Well,
for those of you who don't know.
Well, I guess those of you don't know. Like,
Sharon Tate is an actress who was brutally murdered by the Charlie Manson family.
Right. And she was pregnant. And
she's very pregnant.
Yeah. She was like 8.5 months pregnant. And listeners will know that we just can't do that type of storyline. And nor do we want to.
And Tarantino is a very violent director.
He is. And you know, going into any of his films, that you're going to see extreme violence. Like, too far violence. Like, mm-hmm. You know that going in. And so I told you, I was like, you might have to go see it by yourself because I can't.
And I didn't want to see it without you.
Right.
And so I was like, let's just wait for it to rent, mm-hmm. so that way we can fast forward anything that we need to fast forward.
And Tarantino's important to us in our relationship because that's something that we bonded over when we were dating, because I was a Tarantino fan before I met you, and mm-hmm. you were too. And we've marathoned it together so many times.
When we were dating.
Yes, while we were dating. Like, I think, you know, Tarantino was one of those directors that really got me in high school and made me really love film. Like, when I was watching, like, Kill Bill came out, like, when we were in high school, and it was just, like, I was like, I have never seen anything like this. This is amazing. I was, like, such a film nerd at that time, like watching. I was like, no, guys, you don't understand. This is amazing. And whereas everyone else was, like, you know, just hanging out and watching it, and I was like, no, we have to watch this movie. We have to watch it. And so we bonded over talking about, like, Pulp Fiction, and mm-hmm. we even danced the Mia Wallace dance and John Travolta dance.
We did the Chuck Berry song, Chuck Berry, You Never Can Tell, at our wedding. Pulp Fiction. Like, that was our first dance.
Yeah, so it's important to us, for sure. And we haven't seen a Tarantino film.
In the theater. Since Death Proof.
And we were so excited to go see that together in college, I think it was. And
it was in college, yeah.
We were burned so much. And like, I was just like, oh, this is terrible.
We hated Death Proof.
Hated it.
So
I was
much.
Like, what is this? This is garbage. Not the classic Tarantino that I know and love. Mm-hmm. And so we skipped, like, we skipped several seeing them in theater.
We skipped all of them. We skipped all of them seeing in theater. Right. And, like, I didn't like Inglourious Bastards.
No.
Django, I tried to convince myself that I liked it, but honestly, it's just okay.
I don't like it. No.
It's okay.
I don't like it.
And Hateful Eight, I haven't seen.
Right.
Because I've made myself aware of the content inside, and I'm just like, I don't want to put that stuff in my brain.
Right.
And maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are screaming, like, how can you call yourself a Tarantino film if you haven't seen his latest, you know, besides Once Upon a Time. But, I mean, maybe I'll give it a shot. Maybe I'll watch. Like, Schindler was one of those people who's just like, dude.
Really?
Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know.
But
give me Reservoir Dogs. Give me Pulp Fiction. Like, I just feel like he messes it up until Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. Because, like, what Schindler did was that he messaged us, and I'm not spoiling anything for you guys, but, like, he said that he's like, don't worry, it's handled well. And I'm like, okay. He's like, do you want me to spoil it for you? I go, no. Mm-hmm. Like, don't spoil anything for you. He's like, you and the girl can absolutely handle this. That's what he said. He's like, you and the girl can absolutely handle this. And he knows intimately, like, what we went through.
Right.
With Ripley and everything else, and our sensitivity to pregnant women in film.
Right.
And anything involving pregnancy in film and everything like that. And so we're like, let's go do this.
And so basically, since Schindler gave us the green light, we decided to go see the film. I do want to get into spoiler territory.
We will. And we'll let you guys know.
And clearly you can understand that we liked the film based on how we're talking. So what were you expecting first going into the film?
Going into the film, I was hoping, not expecting, but hoping for classic Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the feeling that I got. There is a huge divergence.
Oh, yeah.
From Kill Bill Volume 2 and before, mm-hmm. is what I call classic Tarantino.
Me too.
And then Inglourious Bass, and then you have Death Proof, mm-hmm. and later,
mm-hmm.
is what I'd call New Age Tarantino.
Right.
We don't like New Age Tarantino.
No.
And so when we saw the trailer, I was like, I feel like I'm in high school.
Right, right.
I went to a midnight showing of Kill Bill Volume 2.
Nice.
And because it was we saw it the night that we graduated high school.
Beautiful.
A group of us went together. Like what we did was like that day, we got out of school early. We marathoned, we watched Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction.
Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown and then Volume 1. And then we went to the midnight showing of Kill Bill Volume 2.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun.
It was so much fun. It was our core group.
Awesome.
And we all loved film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were the creative nerdy kids.
Yeah.
You know, in high school. And so I love that era. Like that day was just filled with classic Tarantino. And it like seeing the trailer for Once Upon a Time, it just brought back that wave of nostalgia.
Sure.
Of what he used to be like.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was hoping for. I wanted to get that feeling of it. And what were you expecting or hoping?
I think that I was scared because I felt so burned by Death Proof On type mm-hmm. of Tarantino films. And it just didn't feel like him. Like some of those films don't feel the way I felt like you were talking about in high school where you're like mesmerized by the script, right? And just like the dialogue's fantastic and the acting is just so Tarantino. There's mm-hmm. there's not really, you know what I'm talking about. Like it's just like that honest dialogue and the personas in there are so rich and like well developed and you're just like, I know who that person is. And it just feels like all of the actors are having fun. Mm-hmm. Like even if they're in a super dramatic scene, it's just fun. It's like usually they're fun. Even if they're dealing with like very like dark content, it's a fun feeling. But looking at all the stars that were in this one, I was like, there's a chance. Like Brad Pitt and Leo DiCaprio Margot Robbie. Like, there's a chance. Maybe it'll be good. And it did feel classic. But I was like, but does it just feel classic? Or is it classic Tarantino? So I was maybe more guarded, but I had hope that it would be good.
And, you know, leaving the theater, what were you thinking?
That could rank up there with my favorite Tarantino.
And what is your favorite Tarantino?
Well, that's a hard question because I really want to see this one again. I think...
Like, not including this one.
Not including this one?
Yeah.
I probably Pulp Fiction just because it's so classic. Like, it's Pulp Fiction.
It freaking won the Palme d'Or.
You can't get any better than that.
Yeah.
But nostalgia-wise and probably just, like, fun to watch, it would be Kill Bill. And I combine them, one and two. So
you combine them?
Yeah.
I see them as two separate movies.
You do?
Tarantino sees them as one.
I see them as one.
Like, that's why...
I love all of it.
When people, like, he's calling Once Upon a Time his ninth movie, people are like, no, it's your tenth movie. He's like, no.
That's how I view it.
It's my ninth movie.
It's one story.
Uh-huh.
So that's how I view it. What about you?
I'm the same way. Like, Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Is my, like, not including Once Upon a Time. Pulp Fiction is my favorite.
Okay.
Then Volume 2.
Okay.
So because like I see a distinct, like there, it's one story, you're right, but I see a distinct difference between Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Well, yeah, they feel different, but mm-hmm. it's still one story.
But I would rewatch Volume 2 more than
Volume
1.
Volume
1, yeah. I really would.
Okay.
That's just me. I'm not saying it's the way to go for everybody.
So Walking out. How did you feel?
You and I normally wait to talk mm-hmm. about how we feel about the movie until we podcast.
Yes.
And we couldn't wait.
No.
And oftentimes when we can't wait, that means we love it. And we, right when we got in the car, like I turned the key and I just looked at you and I was like, that was freaking fantastic. And you're like, I know. And we just started gushing about the movie.
Yeah.
It, like, walking out of the theater, I'm like, that is the most enjoyable movie I've seen
in so long.
In years.
Yeah.
Literally years. And I'm not just talking about in the theater. I'm just talking about movie wise.
I think I was like grinning the whole time because it was just, it gave me nostalgia of why I loved Tarantino back in the day. It was, the story was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I just, and all the acting was, I mean, what you would expect from that cast. And the trailer was accurate.
Yes, it was.
And that, yes, it was. That rarely happens, I feel like, nowadays. Or you just immediately know it's, like, terrible because they've, like, shown you too much information.
Yeah, they didn't pull a Rogue One.
No, no. Yeah, I mean, I cannot say enough good. I even said to you, like, this only happens a few times where I'm like, you need to pre-order that.
That very rare. I think the only other time that you told me about that was, like, Spider-Verse or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah. And that was
actually, no, you didn't even tell me that. No, I wanted to do that for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, this is, yeah.
But, yeah, this is something that we're going to own and watch multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've gotten to the point where I don't feel the need to own everything we like. Because, like, if we just need to watch it one other time or two other times, you could just rent it. And right. It's still cheaper than buying it.
Exactly.
I've gotten to that point. I feel like an old man saying that. But
you've changed.
I have changed. But yeah, like, the trailer totally didn't lie to us. The acting was fantastic. The camera work was phenomenal. And it wasn't showy. Because there's certain times, like, there was a lot of driving in Death Proof, obviously. And it felt like very showy camera work where it's like, look at me, look at me.
Right.
And with this one, there was a lot of driving too. And but it felt complimentary to the story. It felt complimentary to the character. And it's just, we keep talking about classic Tarantino. This movie very much feels like classic Tarantino, but it feels like a much more mature filmmaker.
It does. It does.
To see that kind of growth while at the same time going back to his roots, it's a weird dichotomy.
Yeah.
But it's a very welcome one.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, whatever he's doing right now, keep doing it.
Keep doing it.
Yeah.
And he says he's only going to do one more.
Film?
Yeah.
Just total?
And I hate that. Like, if you...
So 10 films.
Yeah. And like it was, if you asked me 6 months ago... Oh, like, you know, like, after Once Upon a Time, he's only going to make one more. I'd be like, eh, okay. You know, whatever. I haven't liked his last four.
Right.
But after this one, I'm just like,
No, I want more. No. If this is what you're doing, then keep doing it.
If this is what you're doing, keep doing it.
Right.
And side note, his last film, there is a large chance his last film could be a Star Trek film.
That's so weird.
It's so weird.
It's Tarantino Star Trek film.
Yeah, he described it as Pulp Fiction in space.
What alternate reality are we living in where Tarantino makes a Star Trek film? This is weird.
Well, apparently the Kelvinverse is where we're living. Because that's, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, he was in a podcast interview last week, and somebody actually got him to talk about the Star Trek film.
Mm.
And he hasn't had a chance to go over the script yet because somebody else wrote it. And so he's going to go over it and basically, like,
Tarantinoize it.
Yeah, he's going to Tarantinoize it because he's the writer and director on his films.
Mm-hmm.
And so he for himself needs to be heavily involved in the script process. And so he said if I get my hands on it, it's going to be R. If I direct it, it's going to be R. Which I don't like. I don't want
a Star Trek
an R-rated Star Trek film. But I'm also old enough and mature enough to realize that not everything has to be for me. Not everything in a franchise has to be just for me.
That's true.
But
isn't Star Trek supposed to be for, like, everyone?
That would be my argument.
Okay.
But I feel like franchises need to try different things or they're going to die. And Star Trek movies...
Mm-hmm.
I think TV's doing fine right now.
Okay.
But Star Trek movies, if they don't try something different, they're going to die.
They're going to die.
They're going to die.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that has to be Tarantino.
Right.
But I applaud them for trying something different. Now, a year ago, like, we found out that this might happen. And I got into arguments with people. I was like, it's never going to happen. Never going to happen. Not the Tarantino part, but the R rating.
Okay.
I was like, really? An R-rated Star Trek film? Like, Star Trek Beyond... was a PG-13 film, and PG-13 films On average, make way more than R-rated films.
Sure.
And this is already a dying movie franchise. You're really going to slap an R rating on a dying movie franchise?
Doesn't make sense.
And everyone keeps going back, but Deadpool, Deadpool. Shut up.
Star Trek isn't Deadpool.
Star Trek isn't Deadpool.
No.
But yeah, regardless, it would be really interesting if Tarantino... Like, it's funny because like, as soon as I left the theater of Once Upon a Time, I was like, bring on the Tarantino Star Trek film.
Okay.
That's how jazzed I was. And then like I calmed down an hour later. I'm like, I still don't know. I don't know. But they're not calling me up and asking
That's
me
true.
What
they're
my
not
opinion
asking
is.
You. Well, we obviously both liked it. Mm-hmm. Should we get into some spoiler territory?
I don't know if we need to spoil stuff just yet. I mean, like, I guess if you want to. I mean, we can say like, obviously... We recommend you go see it.
Yes.
Like, I'm telling everybody.
Yes.
Like, if you are interested in this film, go see it in the theater.
Yes. I agree.
You agree.
Oh,
You're
yeah,
saying the same
100%.
Thing.
100%. Okay. It is worth the ticket.
It's long. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes.
It is. It is a long. But it did not feel
it did, it didn't long. It didn't slag on. Yeah, like,
no,
it wasn't.
I was interested the entire time. In fact, like, I had to pee once, and I was, like, really upset that I had to go pee.
And once again, you chose the absolute wrong time to go.
I am terrible at choosing moments to pee. It's just horrible. You are so good at it. I usually am just like, okay, they were still talking in the diner. It's cool, whatever. And me, like, people get married, people die. I like the whole plot has changed, costumes have changed, like locations have changed, and I think I'm doing the right move, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It's a knack that I have. It's on my resume.
Okay.
But yeah, okay. So we can go ahead and get in spoiler territory so we can really talk about it. So if you have not seen it yet,
wait.
Go see it and then listen to the rest of this podcast. But we're already at the 36-minute mark. So we gave you 36 minutes worth of content if you haven't seen it yet. but if you have, you can continue to listen. So spoiler. You have been warned. So obviously, the big spoiler... Pretty much the only thing that you could really spoil is that it's an alternate reality. It's a story.
Right.
That didn't
happen. It's a story, Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time, .. in Hollywood. That's why we didn't get the title card until the end of the movie. Because
mm-hmm.
It reinforced the idea of Once Upon a Time.
Right.
This is a story. This
right.
is not how it happened,
exactly.
obviously. Sharon
yeah.
Tate, like Sharon Tate survives.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was never accosted. She was never attacked. She never died.
Right.
And life's going to turn out differently.
Right, exactly. And it just was interesting because you knew that the stories were going to converge somewhere and you knew it was probably going to happen at the end, you know. But I don't know, what point did you realize it was like an alternate reality?
Well, okay, here's the thing. I feel like about halfway through the movie.
Or just a story. Not necessarily an alternate reality, but just
a
story,
yeah,
right?
I mean, we're so ingrained
I know.
in superheroes and science
right.
fiction that we're like, AU.
It's a story.
It's an AU story. about halfway through the movie, I thought this might not end
the same way.
The same way, because we want to see Brad Pitt kick ass. And the only way that we're going to see him kick ass or like, you know, like take on the Manson family is if things happen that didn't happen in history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, okay. But the thing is, like Schindler telling me that we don't see any violence towards Tate, that kind of helped me think.
Which we asked for. Yes.
It was totally 100% yes. not his fault. He didn't spoil a single thing
nope,
for us.
We asked for him to tell us that detail.
Yes. And just the sheer action of him saying... you don't see any violence towards Tate.
We got to go see a really awesome movie.
Yeah. And like, but the thing is like him saying that made me think the entire movie, okay, why don't we see it?
Right. Right. Which you only natural.
Only natural. And so because I kept thinking that and the way things were going, and once we got to know Cliff a little bit more, Brad Pitt's character, I was like, okay, maybe we're not going to see it. Like maybe he's going to pull like an Inglourious Basterds. They kill Hitler
at the end
of the movie.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And I'm like, okay, so he's done this before.
Right. This is nothing new for Tarantino.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I figured it out. Now, so was that kind of the same story as you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know necessarily what the moment was. It might have been later in the film for me, but I was like, there's no way this is going to end the same way. And maybe it's because I was like, I felt like I was able to go see it because we had talked and like, okay, so either it's, things are going to stop right before.
Right.
And that was something that I did have in my head. I was like, okay, it may be this. But I think, I mean, probably the point where I was really reinforced home was when like Leo DiCaprio was like yelling at them in their car. I was like, okay, things are going to be different. Mm-hmm. Cool. But I wasn't sure. I was like, okay, do we just kind of like dot, 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 like, you know, they do die, but we don't see it, or we see the aftermath, you know, right. Which I didn't want to see either. So I think that there was a part of that where I was like, oh, I just hope we don't see anything. So maybe just for me, it was later. It was later.
Yeah. I think if Schindler didn't tell us that, I don't know if I would have come to that conclusion before we saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that I can think about it now. There's no way that I can separate the two events.
Right.
And I'm fine with it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anything was ruined whatsoever, even if he flat out spoiled it for me.
Mm-hmm. No, nothing was ruined. Nothing would have been ruined. No.
I mean, like, that's how good it was.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, from the moment go, like, when we started watching the film, just the dynamic of something that's always interesting to me is when two strong actors can play so well in each other and you are 100% with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like Leo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are such powerhouses of talent, but I totally 100% believed that they were like, what was the phrase that they used?
I love, like, Kurt Russell narrated. Yeah. He had two sections of narration, and he said, he's like, well, you know, when you're more than brothers, but little less than wives, or when your best friend is more than a brother, but little less than a wife.
Yeah.
Getting drunk is kind of the best way to go out, or something
right,
like that.
Right. And it was just, you know, like, I 100% loved their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was it somewhat one-sided? Yes. And yet you just were like, they cared about each other. So even when, like, Cliff had to do all the grunt work for
Rick,
it was okay because they both were getting something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
they even established that at the top of the film.
They did.
Where, like Rick, Rick was talking with Cliff about like getting him stunt worker, and Cliff's like, listen, I haven't been your stuntman for years. I'm your driver. He's like, don't get me wrong. He's like, it pays well. I get to house it in the hills for you.
Right.
You know, you talk about the hours and like, so, and he was genuine. You could tell he was genuinely appreciative of the work that he was getting.
Yeah.
And so right off the bat, you're just like, okay, he's not taking advantage of him.
No.
He's taking care of him.
Right. And yet at the same time, like, you know, there were moments where there was a moment where like Rick got Cliff the job and like put himself out there and was like, no, you're doing this. He's going to be my stunt man. And so you could see like he was rooting for him.
Mm-hmm.
But also like, you know, Cliff was like helping his self-esteem, helping Rick's self-esteem by like telling him, you got this, you know, you got this, you know. And so it was such a great relationship to watch. It was just so fantastic.
And what's really weird and really too bad is that we didn't get that much of them both on screen together.
That's true.
I mean, like, we got a lot of them, one or the other. We got a lot of Leo. We got a lot of Brad. But not enough, in my opinion, together. Like, I would have enjoyed a little bit more.
They were precious moments when they were together.
Yes. They were great moments.
Well-executed moments, too.
Yes.
Like, you definitely got the impression of their relationship, and it was well-established. So, I was okay with it.
Okay.
Like, I could I have had more? Yes. But I was good with the amount.
What did you think about the amount of Margot Robbie?
I at first thought it was odd how much we were getting of her.
Or how little.
Well, so I was a little confused at first until it's kind of one of those films where like you have to watch the whole story to really understand what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was clearly like how these neighbors interacted basically how this story interacted with Sharon Tate's character. So you had to show Sharon Tate's a little bit of her life and establish her life a little bit to understand why we would care that she didn't die and that they didn't get to her house. But I was surprised that we didn't see her, a little bit more of her. And yet I was kind of okay with how much we did see of her.
I was fine with it. I was fine. I think it was a perfect amount, but I was surprised that it was so little.
Mm-hmm.
Just because she was so heavily featured in the trailers and everything
but
like
I
that.
But I think the thing that I was kind of relieved about, like, throughout the film was, like, okay, this is not, like, a biopic.
Right, right.
So I was, like, happy about that. I was like, all right, so we're not just, like, you know, seeing the woes of Sharon Tate or, like, the struggles of her. No, like, this is a story, and it primarily focuses on Rick Dalton and mm-hmm. Cliff.
And I want to read something. I was talking with John Mills, who is a co-host on Aggressive Negotiations and Retrospective, which everybody should check out, and A Little Less Than a Wife. He he says, like, so, like, we were all talking about, you know, about Margot Robbie and about how little she was in it. And he says, I took Robbie's role like Hitler. Like Hitler's in Inglourious Basterds, the historical red herring. The story was about Rick and Cliff, and she was a historical anchor that plays against the audience's expectation.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that she's a name, as in Margot Robbie, came with too much of an expectation that she was a main character.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think that for the story that was told, which I liked the story that was told, I felt like she was in it an appropriate amount of time.
Because it was about Rick and Cliff and how their story intertwined
exactly
with hers or prevented her death. Not about her,
mm-mm.
but about how it prevented her death.
Right. Because we didn't need to, know, we got to see a little bit of her, like, you know, checking out her own movie and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Nice.
And, you know, you basically what Taron Egerton was doing is, like, he's giving you enough of emotional connection to care.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much that we have to know, like, the insecurities of Sharon Tate, like we know the insecurities of Rick Dalton. Like, we're focusing on Rick's character, not on Sharon Tate.
I liked Cliff a whole lot more than I liked Rick.
Well, I mean, aren't you supposed to? He's, like, the easygoing one, right? Yeah.
I felt like his storyline was more interesting to me.
Oh, okay.
There was a lot of times when we were with Rick, I was kind of like, okay, this is a long scene. Let's
get back to Brad Pitt.
Let's get back to Brad Pitt. But of course, I'm always that way when I watch a movie. Let's get back to Brad Pitt. Whatever. Who is this person?
See, I think it would be boring without Rick's character.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But you're just saying you just liked his storyline
more?
No,
I liked Rick's okay. storyline, and I liked Rick himself. I thought it was very interesting to see how insecure he actually is.
Right.
And how he's able to overcome it. I love that. Like, I love it when we see the inner depths of a character and they are failing and failing, and you want nothing but them to succeed, and then they do.
Right.
I hate that whole subverting expectations crap
right.
where, like, you see someone, you know, come up to it and they fall short, and it's just like, oh, that's real life. Well, screw you. I'm not here to watch real life, obviously. So I really appreciated that. So I like his character. I like his storyline.
Yeah.
And I love the two of them together. But there were times when I felt like his scene kind of lingers a little too long.
Yeah, but I think they also gave, like, Cliff more interesting things to do, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, fighting Bruce Lee and going to
the Manson compound
is way more interesting than, you know, Leo DiCaprio just on set, right?
Sitting in his, like, trailer, yeah, crying.
It just is. It's more interesting. So I think that you kind of, it's hard to say. Like, yes, did I enjoy him more as a character? Absolutely. But really what I enjoyed was the two of them.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And the one-liners.
Oh, yeah.
Just right off. I mean, Tarantino just always gives you such great one-liners.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's just a genius when it comes to those things where you're just like, oh, that's amazing.
And when we were at the Playboy Mansion, and then they had Steve McQueen explain the romantic triangle between
Sharon Tate
and Roman Polanski, and I think his name was Jerry.
Jerry, yeah.
Her former fiance. Like, you had Steve McQueen explain it, and then he was explaining it to a woman. I don't know who she was. And she said, like, yeah, she definitely has a type. And he's like, what are you talking about? Well, a really creative and talented man with long hair.
Short
brown hair who looks like a 12-year-old boy. And then Steve McQueen takes a drag from a cigarette. And he's like, I never had a chance. Because yeah. Steve McQueen is a man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Or was a man.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, and that's such a great way to establish, like, okay, who's this guy yeah. who's always with them,
yeah.
you know, at the party. And I was laughing, too, because I was like, I just want to go to that Playboy Mansion party. And you were like, that is the tamest Playboy Mansion party ever depicted in film. And I was like, I know, it looks like so much fun. Like, everyone has their clothes on, everyone's just like even clothed in the pool, and they're just like dancing by themselves. That sounds like just
dancing back and forth.
That's my kind of dancing. I was like, that's fantastic, I want to go to that party. I was like, all right, it was a very like, I was like, Quentin Tarantino is very tame in this moment. Why is he so tame?
And honestly, as far as Tarantino goes, up until the very last scene, you know, this, he was, by his own standards,
yes,
very tame.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Very tame. And, like, I mean, of course he was throwing around the F word like crazy. Sex? No, there was no sex. No, there was sex. No nudity. There was one sexual reference.
Right.
And then you had ultra super violence at the end.
Yes. But here's the thing. They're the Manson family, and we know what they would have done in this. What they did do in reality. So you did not care how murdered they got, and they got murdered so hard.
So hard. It was so cathartic.
Yeah.
For people who know the story.
And he knew that.
Yes, he knew exactly what he was doing.
He knew he could push it just a little further each blow.
Each kill.
Yes.
Like Tarantino knew. He's like, there's going to be no remorse for these characters.
No.
There's going to be no reservations.
Right.
And he's right. We were 100% behind him. We're just like, murder them. Torture them.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want to do to them.
It was cathartic. It was like, yes, kill them in the worst possible way.
It was
because they're
baser,
horrible, horrible people.
Yes. It was our baser instincts.
It's
true. It was our lizard Neanderthal brains coming out saying, kill those people.
Yeah. And it was, you know, just... I know, like, we mentioned before seeing this film, we mentioned what, like, that Sharon Tate was going to, you know, the character of Sharon Tate was going to be in this film. I remember your mom just being like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That was so, oh, my gosh. How horrific. Oh, my gosh. You know, just, it made an impression on a generation.
It really did.
And whenever, you know, someone dies in a horrific way, but this was such a... And I was doing some research after we watched the film of, like, and maybe someone knows more than I do, but, like, the research, it wasn't really 100% clear as to why.
His motivation.
His motivation was not, like, oh, because he did this, or because she did this, or because he felt. It was, like, and I think that's also what, like, creeped people out so much, was just because, like, the motivation wasn't super clear, and certain things are just completely off limits, and she was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the fact that Tarantino just brutally murdered them, we were like, this is just the grossest, like, horrifying images we were watching, but you're okay with it.
And on top of that, he had Brad Pitt's character tripping on acid.
Right.
And so that, in, I'm not saying in life,
right,
but in the audience's mind, in the rule book of movie magic,
exactly,
it made certain acts okay. Because, like, if a sober person did this, even to home invaders,
right,
you'd be like, this guy's a psychotic,
there's something wrong with, he's broken,
like, you're a broken man,
right,
you need to be in a mental institution if you brutally killed people this way, even home invaders.
Right.
But because he was tripping on acid,
it was okay in some way. We were able to justify it, right?
It's movie logic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not real life.
It's movie logic.
It's movie logic. Just like movie logic when we're saying, like, yes, kill them. It's movie logic.
Right.
We're not saying, yes, actually kill
them. No, you know. No. It's just one of those things where again, it just goes to your basic instincts of like, mm-hmm. well, it's okay because he was on acid.
Yeah. Or like when you're watching another movie and you're just like, oh, she was so rude to him. I hope she dies. Like,
right, right. You like, never you say don't that in real that. Life. Right, yeah. Exactly.
It's a movie.
Exactly.
But it was like the kind of violence that they had. Like you and I were so into it because we knew Tarantino was going to take it over
oh,
the
yeah.
top.
Oh, yeah.
Because you always expect that.
When the violence started, you knew it was going to go further than it possibly needed to.
And it just, but it just, each level kept shocking you more and more to the point where like we were grabbing each other and just going, oh, like that loud
it's
in
true.
The theater.
It's true.
And then at the very end, when you think it's almost over, Leonardo DiCaprio comes out with a freaking flamethrower.
And just torches the last one,
a
the last
literal
girl who's alive.
Flamethrower.
Yes.
And when he walks out with that, you're just like,
yes. Oh, seriously. And they had already established that he has the thing in his like.
And he knew how to use
he
it.
He knew how to use it. And it was just like, yeah. And you know what? If that was in your pool and
if
jumped
that was in your pool house, yeah.
If you, yeah, like you would. Like,
you'd
honestly.
Use it. Yeah, why not? I have a flamethrower. There's a home intruder. I'd be stupid not to.
Who has a gun? Yeah.
Yeah, he has a gun. Yeah.
Yeah, I there was a few, like, I mean, it's really hard to, for me, I want to see it again. It's hard for me to, like, pinpoint, like, honestly, a lot of weaknesses. I mean, I'm sure I can next time we watch it. Like, I'm sure there's going to be things that pop up. Mm-hmm. What did you think about them using footage from the Wrecking Crew? Where they didn't like put Margot Robbie into it, but then when they showed this random footage of the Grey Escape with Leo's character in it, which I feel like, was that a dream?
That was a very confusing scene.
Okay.
Because we had Timothy Olyphant's character talking to
who we love, by the way.
Who we love very much. There's a lot of handsome people in this movie. he was talking with Leonardo DiCaprio and Leo was talking about, you know, his former roles and what he almost got. And like Oliphant said, like, was it true? You almost got, you know, you almost shot Escape. Great Escape. And Leo said like he didn't, you know, like it was down between him and like three other guys. But then all of a sudden we get flashes of scenes of him in the Great Escape. And mm-hmm. they used footage from the Great Escape.
Right.
Like they digitally composited Leo over Steve McQueen.
Right.
Into this film. Like, they Forrest Gumped it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of like, wait, is he lying to Timothy Olyphant? Like, is he saying, like, he's like, oh, yeah, I was almost in it, but I wasn't cast in it. It was just between me and three other guys. And he's just imagining what it would have been like if he was in the movie? Or did they actually shoot some of it?
Right.
But he got fired.
Yeah.
But they didn't explain that.
No, they didn't.
And so when I saw that, I was thinking when Margot Robbie, Sharon Tate, walks into the theater because she's going to watch her own movie, I was like.
And that was first, I think. In the.
I don't think so.
No?
No, it came after.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it came after. I'm pretty sure it came after because okay. I had that feeling
okay.
of, oh, well, Sharon Tate, like Margot Robbie is going to be in this film.
Okay.
That she's going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be Sharon Tate. They're gonna Forrest Gump it.
They didn't do
they
that.
They didn't. They just kept Sharon
so
Tate.
So it kind of made me feel like maybe that was just like Rick Dalton imagining that he was in The Great Escape and what kind of job he would do
yeah.
with the role.
I think it could be a couple different things. Margot Robbie, how they dressed her up and how they did her makeup does look a lot like
Sharon
Tate.
She looks a lot like Sharon Tate.
Like she's a dead ringer for Sharon Tate.
She is.
So I think they probably thought, okay, well, we don't have to.
I think I even read that relatives, like, when they saw her performance, like, started crying because she even, like, got the voice.
Right.
Like, she did such a good job.
And, like, you can do a lot with makeup. And also mm-hmm. in the movie, like, Wrecking Crew,
She's
dressed up. She has a different hair color. Right. She has her eye makeup is different.
Right.
And so you can say a lot through it. You can say like, oh, she was just, you know, you can logic it away. Also, she was murdered horribly and maybe they thought it was disrespectful to replace her
yeah.
in her work.
Yeah.
Which like, I think all are valid points.
Yeah. Because unfortunately, I feel like Sharon Tate's known because of her murder
mm-hmm.
and not
more
because
so
of her
movies.
Work. And so like, maybe Tarantino is like, hey, let's like showcase her work just a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. and kind of be in awe of it
right.
like for a moment. So that's possible too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it could have been all of those things. Mm-hmm. One of those things or all of them.
Yeah.
Or any.
Yeah. It was a little, I just found it interesting because it was like, I guess I was just trying to interpret, like I was totally respected keeping Sharon Tate mm-hmm. in Wrecking Crew, but I was a little like, wait, what are we seeing when we were watching?
That was ambiguous.
Yeah. The Great Escape.
Mm-hmm. That was very ambiguous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was there anything that you didn't like in the movie? Anything where you're just like, eh.
No, I mean, honestly.
Nothing like, with Kurt Russell?
Oh, you do.
I was trying to set you up.
Okay. So I did not feel like any of the narration was needed.
Well, you went to pee during the second part of the narration.
That's true. So like, yeah, Rick Dalton got married while I was peeing and... He made four films in 6 months, and I missed all that. And then they were like on a plane back to the U.S. by the time I got back.
And so they had a conversation where Rick had to fire a Cliff because he couldn't afford him anymore.
So all that happened, and then I was like, well, crap. Like, why did I go at that time? I think you missed, like, where were they?
I went to pee when they were at the Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, they were both just eating. And like talking and like, well, Kurt Russell was talking then too. He was like,
oh, he was?
Yeah, he was just saying, you didn't miss anything. Basically, he was just saying like, yeah, Sharon Tate was hot because, you know, she was very pregnant. Basically saying that because like, it was a really hot night and it was just like, that's all you missed, honestly. And then like, you know,
I'm telling you, it's a sixth sense. I know.
Well, we can't go pee together because you have to be there or I have to be. Anyway.
I'll see it when we own it, I guess.
Yeah. Whatever.
But you didn't really dig on the narration.
No. I just felt like there was no point. Like, and it wasn't consistent. So, like, if it was consistent, okay, all the way through, mm-hmm. like, Royal Tenenbaums, okay?
Yeah, because it's not like you don't like narration.
No, I like narration. I love narration. I like Kurt Russell's voice. But
good man.
It did not feel appropriate when they were using it. It also felt like, we could easily do this with like title cards when we were, because we used those all throughout, like where it was like
6 months later.
Well, no, they did that though.
They did,
and,
yeah.
And they also did like locations and they also did times, like during the Mexican restaurant scene, they were like, this is, you know, 8:30, yeah. you know, PM or whatever. So it just felt like, why is he talking?
I feel like if it was just the middle, like if it was just the beginning of the third act where they jumped 6 months forward. If they had narration just there, I think it would have been fine.
I disagree.
What? Why? Like, okay. Here's
you mean we had never heard narration up until that point?
Yeah.
No. That's terrible.
What? No, because, okay, that first time we hear narration, it was for like 5 seconds. And it was like a
It took me out of it. I didn't like it.
It totally took you out of the film where it's just like, oh, that's a lie. It's because he was drunk and he got his license taken away. Boom, back into the film. You're like, okay, is this going to be a thing? Like, are we going to hear him pop up? And we didn't. And so I thought that was weird. But when we get to the beginning of the third act and we have a huge time jump where he is now married and he made 4 films in 6 months, there's no way we could have covered that in a good amount of time. Maybe you could have done that with a montage.
Yes. But yes, you could have.
I'm saying is that there was narration, and if you wanted to do the narration, that's the way to do it, is just do that 6 month jump and then don't do it at the Mexican restaurant. Don't do it with the drunk driving.
I disagree. I think you have to be consistent. I think you have to do it all the way through, like sporadically, like, or you have to, what they did was not enough. And I don't think that you could, I don't think that it should have happened right after, like, if you just have it 6 months later part. I don't think that works either. You're wrong.
I don't care.
Okay, but you're wrong.
I'm fine.
It took me out of it. I didn't think there was any purpose to it because we were able to gather everything that they told us in that narration. If they just gave us a montage or just like what they were doing at the Mexican restaurant, like time, whatever, mm-hmm. and then just have her talk and be like, oh, I'm just hot. That's all you needed. Okay? Yeah. Like,
well, I'm saying the Mexican restaurant narration was pointless from what you've described. Yeah, that I get.
Okay.
I'm fine with being wrong if I am. I don't care.
Well, you are, but that's all right.
That's all right.
I still love you.
So I think we've been going for a while. It's over an hour.
That's because it's an amazing film.
We should probably let these people go. So how would you rate this on a star rating, on a 5-star rating? How would you rate this film?
Have I ever given something a 5-star?
No. Is that, are you considering that?
I think this might be a 5-star for me.
Wow.
I know. I don't think this has ever happened in our nuptial history.
This could be the first time that you give a star rating higher than me.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because normally you are...
I am brutal.
You are a brutal star critic. Like, you are...
Even though I did not like Kurt Russell's narration, it did not lower the star for me.
Like, you... Like, when you give a star rating, it really earns that star rating.
I think it did.
I am very loose.
You're loosey-goosey.
I am loosey-goosey like I'm drunk on prom. Like, I... like, I am that loose with my stars. And so when I gave this one 4.5.
Okay.
And when I gave it 4.5, I'm just like, am I being too loose?
Really?
You know, like, am
I? Because I'm so harsh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But like, I wanted, like, I gave a quick, like when I have a letterbox diary, and on it I said, I was like, I got to see it again. I got to think about it. I'm giving it 4.5 stars, but I easily feel like this could be bumped up to 5.
Well,
that's what I
said.
I bet
you're going to go do that right now.
No, I'm keeping it at 4.5 right now.
No, you just need to see it again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that narration, man, it's just...
That's just really kidding. What just killed it for you. Kidding. No, I honestly, there's not much... I mean, and again, like, even though I clearly did not like the narration and I felt like it was unnecessary, it didn't change how much I loved this movie.
No, it was
fantastic.
Like, eh. Yeah, 4.5 for me. 4.5 stars.
I'm going to stick with my 5.
Which, I mean, that's the thing. Is that, like, 5 stars is like Godfather. And,
I know.
And
but this could Toy turn Story. Out being, this could, with time, be my favorite Tarantino.
That was going to be my next question. Because you have Pulp Fiction first, then Kill Bill. And what would you have after that? Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, probably.
Same with me.
Okay.
Where would you put it? As of right now, seeing it one time.
Only one time is, I really have a hard time. I mean, I definitely know I would like it more than Reservoir Dogs.
Same.
But I'm wondering if it kind of fits in between Pulp Fiction and Kill Bill for me. Like, that's kind of what I'm questioning. If not, I don't know. Like, it could be.
I think Pulp Fiction is still
number one
for me.
It's just so classic.
I think Kill Bill Volume 2 is still number two for me.
Really?
But I think... How Once Upon a Time is nestled in between Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Well, and I view them as one whole thing, so...
So this is...
So it's essentially the same. Yeah, but with time, I wonder. I really do wonder how it'll rank for me, because I liked it that much.
Yeah, I really was jazzed with this film. I think the only other time I was super jazzed like this with a film was Infinity War.
Mm.
And that was a completely different type.
Yeah, it's of hard feeling. To
like Infinity War felt like a prize after 10 years of competing for something.
Right.
I felt like it was dessert. Like Infinity War was dessert after having 10 years of a meal. And with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's standalone. It's its own thing. It's an original story, and you get that same jazzed feeling. Like Infinity War needed, you know, all those 20 some films to back it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just a different type of film.
It's just a completely, it's apples and oranges.
Right.
But having that
feeling,
enjoyment quotient, that entertainment quotient.
Right.
Was Infinity War. Was like Infinity War. But like we said, it's totally different. But I was just left the theater like, that was so entertaining. Like, that is why I go to the movies.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's how I feel too.
Yeah.
You should go see it again.
It's an almost 3-hour movie and we have a toddler. So
that's true. It's probably not going to happen until it comes out. But. Would we want to?
Yes. Very much so.
100%.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts if you have the time. It really does help us out. And please tell your friends about us. We'll try to podcast as much as we can and as often as we can. So please, word of mouth really helps us out. If you know people who would like our dynamic or like our opinions or find them interesting, please let them know. Send the link to your friends and your families and your coworkers. Go to thenerdparty.com/nerdnuptial. From there, you can find out all the ways that you can listen to us as well as all of our backlogged episodes. And you can find us all over on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can find me personally on Twitter at the insane Robin. And another thing. How cool was it that we got to see BB in Once Upon a Time?
Right? Yeah,
she only had BB one quick
from,
shot.
From Kill Bill. Yeah.
But it was still her.
Yeah. And let us know what you thought about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yes. Do you think I'm crazy for giving it 5 stars? Or, you know, did you like Death Proof more? Or
oh, God. You know what? I don't want to know.
You know what? I don't want to know from you.
I don't want to know if you like Death Proof more.
No, just tell us what you think of the movie, what you thought. Was there certain things that bothered you? Did you like the narration with Kurt Russell? Did you not? Tell us what you think.
Yes, and you can do that by going to thenerdparty.com/contact and selecting Nerd Nuptial from the drop-down menu. Fill out the form. It'll send us an email. And also, you can reach out to us on social like all the ways that I talked about before. I love you.
I know.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.